This is Stateside. I'm Laura Weber-Davis in for April Baer. When we talk about the weaknesses of the housing sector, the struggles faced specifically by renters who are living below or near the poverty line, it's easy to put the onus on landlords, slumlords, people of means taking advantage of vulnerable renters. But there are many property owners who are working just as hard as any organization to find equitable solutions and instill humanity back into the renter-landlord relationship. To that end, I wanted to talk about fault lines within the housing sector with Andre Watson, a landlord who owns properties in Detroit. Andre Watson, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So how do you view your relationship with your renters?
Well, for me, I attempt to personalize the relationships with the renters because I think that's the healthiest approach, although it's sometimes not as traditional, you know, where you keep it simply business. But I do think personalizing it, and it does take extra effort and skill, but I think it's worth it long term for both the landlord and the tenant. And that's been my approach. And I do that because for me, it's somewhat personal. I was that renter for the majority of my life coming up. And I also have a level of passion for really enhancing the community.
You remind me, you have about 30 some properties. Is that right? Am I remembering that right?
Actually, I sold quite a few. So actually I have about half of that.
Okay. In the teens, somewhere in the teens. And how many people are you dealing with? Is it families or individuals?
No, it's families. But actually quite a few older seniors, actually. Almost the extreme. Partial seniors, partial young people starting out, new families, single moms.
And what is their general income level? Where do they sit on the economic ladder?
I would say there's in the senior community, I'd say above average, especially for the city of Detroit. I think the average city of Detroit income, you know, is somewhat vulnerable, but I think that number is misleading. But there's high levels of poverty that sometimes goes in that number. But I would say for seniors, maybe about 40, 50,000 maybe. So a little bit, definitely above the average income for the city of Detroit.
Right.
But for the newer households, the younger couples, you know, theirs is more aligned, like 30-ish, under 30, low 30s.
Straddling the poverty line, or at least the difficulty in making ends meet line at times.
Absolutely.
Have your renters been able to keep stable jobs through the pandemic, or has that been an issue as of late?
No, it has been an issue as of late. Yeah, that's been really concerning because my concern is that not only have they not been able to keep stable jobs during the pandemic, but commonly, you know, my tenants who are African Americans, that community tends to definitely be overly burdened with first line, the illness itself, also some concern with first line vulnerabilities. So it's a healthy amount of displacement. And my real concern is what will happen with the economy going forward. Because I think we all have to do something with the consequence of being literally shut down and tremendously disturbed as far as our norms are concerned. So all of that, in my opinion, still needs to go through the economy. So I would suspect that, you know, in certain communities in particular will be more affected.
What has the moratorium on evictions meant for your relationship with your renters? Has it changed the dynamic between you at all?
Thank God it did not.
Okay.
I think the early integrity mattered to where we knew we were all working together. I stayed in contact and, you know, I did. I had a rougher relationship with the tenant, but thank God not a lot. But the moratorium, you know, I'm not predatory, so I didn't feel the need to intimidate during this time. But I did stay engaged with the tenant,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a little bit of coaching or even resources that I may have heard about. I would extend it on to the tenant so that they can be empowered, because everyone still owns a part in the relationship, and that is unavoidable.
You mentioned that your childhood being raised in a home that you were a renter has obviously had an impact on you. How did you get into property ownership and being a landlord?
Oddly enough, it was one random experience on a Saturday morning. I saw a gentleman who came to our house. I guess I was young enough to where I paid attention. It was a young boy working with his father. They were African-American. And I remember just watching them put down the tarp, look at the ceiling, talk a lot, rub on the ceiling, and they fixed the leak. And I guess my awareness bubble opened when I paid attention and it really registered. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that seems cool. And then I later found out they were our landlords. And that's when it hit me that, oh yeah, I can do that. And that's what I thought. Oddly enough, I called down to a nonprofit. Well, this was a little bit later, but that experience, and I wanted to learn. I think early on in my career as a landlord, I called down to a nonprofit, and that nonprofit intimidated me. Yes, it was a nonprofit that was not open enough. And later on, I found out that nonprofit, you know, some of the people who were managing it were not as culturally open, I'll just say. And so anyway, it intimidated me. And I remember how vulnerable that would be for most. Thank God for me, it wasn't. I kept going. But I remember all of the pain that I, you know, experienced as an early landlord. It had a lot to do with it. I didn't know how to really do it. But had I had a positive experience, I sometimes wonder where I would be if I had had the proper support along with my own drive. I wonder, you know, where I would be. But instead, I received the other. But it made me stronger. But I do think, you know, it's time for us to, you know, try to win with proper support, not always in this, you know, weird struggle. Yeah, like if I had proper guidance during that time, that would have been, I just wonder who I would have been.
Well, we've heard stories, historical and modern day, of Black homeowners and would-be homeowners struggling to access capital to buy. Mortgages in recent years in Detroit have tended to go to white homeowners, despite the fact that it's an 80% Black city. Have you ever had trouble securing loans in a way that you felt was unfair or unexplained?
I do attribute some of the inability to have access to capital to definitely systemic racism, as well as cultural, like just not aware. So culturally, you know, how we handled money has not always been the best approach. So I think there's a learning opportunity so that we can actually become more aware, we being African Americans, and systemic solutions, I believe, would come by lending institutions really opening up their minds, challenging themselves to move beyond their norms and engaging the community that could be a viable customer. I mean, it really could be a win-win situation, but it does require more courage and more disturbance to the norms.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Andre Watson. He's a landlord who owns several properties in the city of Detroit. Andre, you've talked on this show before, and you mentioned earlier about not being a predatory type of landlord and that you work with your renters to make sure that things work even when they get hairy. Is an understanding of racial injustice in society a factor, tangibly or subconsciously, into the desire to make it work with your renters?
Definitely. For me, it's very personal. It's personal and empowering. So a part of my activism is mixed into what I do. Economic empowerment, as well, I'm a product of economic empowerment. And not to mention, housing is quite fundamental. And so for me, it's a crusade almost. And it has gotten me into trouble with my being too lenient at times. But, you know, I just feel thankful that I've at least had healthy tenant-landlord relationships. And I can still do that extra offering so that it is personalized.
When you say trouble, what do you mean? How would you couch that?
The tenant is not understanding that our warm or more friendly relationship definitely still means that there's an obligation, that they still have to pay their rent, that they still owe a level of care to the home, and that we work together. There's times where I may not respond as fast as they would want me to, but I just want them to know I'm really going to respond. I owe them the consideration, and they owe me the consideration of going beyond to make sure at least the house is secure and that, you know, we work together as a team. I try to create the team feel early. And I know some landlords who really just keep it straight up and down.
You're an entrepreneur and you're African American. How do those two things balance for you as you pursue a life in a capitalist society?
I think for me, I believe that being an entrepreneur it's a powerful opportunity. And I believe it's an area that's been lacking within our community. So for me, it's been very personal and it allows me some freedoms that I appreciate. And for me, it's just very personal to strive to be the most effective entrepreneur I can out here. And so as an African-American, I feel like I was equipped with the capacity to overcome a lot of the obstacles. And I'm not naive to think that, you know, everybody doesn't get everything. And so there are many things I don't have in my character or in my resource bank, but I do believe I was afforded an awareness that allowed me to maneuver effectively as an entrepreneur.
So now that you are well into this career as a landlord, what do you want people to know about what's not working in the housing sector or that industry and that level of interaction between people and between a system that is set up?
I would love for the people who are in control and those who care to really strengthen a community and those who are trying to learn from this whole recent Black Lives Matter movement. You know, the asset of the house to a regular individual was very fundamental. It's equivalent to the heart, if you will, of the body. So it's kind of very critical for quality of life, for longevity, for, you know, energy. So I would challenge our leaders to really focus more on the youth. I think it should be like triage done within our community, where we're intentionally going after our youth to acclimate them to home ownership. What does it look like? What is a mortgage? What is a renter? When do I rent? How should I buy my first home? How do I take care? I mean, so the younger people, I think we should attempt to get to them earlier and more effectively. And I think that banks and lending institutions should be incentivized to be more creative. Be more creative. And the feedback from the social worker needs to be married with the landlord or entrepreneur. Then we can come up with creative solutions. I think regular lending institutions should feel ashamed if they don't become more creative than status quo, if the status quo is not getting the results that they are after.
What is the incentive for that creativity in your mind?
I would say if they're opening their minds up, it could be actually new customer base. And it could, there's a humanity component as well. I mean, anything that attacks the deep trenches of poverty, like a home, it should be almost a principle or like a code that they commit to. It's almost removing the theory of what they stand for, like home ownership and good citizenry, to challenging themselves to get in there and do some work to produce it. Yeah, and if they are lost, I would suggest that they really grab entrepreneurs like myself, grab social workers, and bring us in a room and really just work it out and pop out creative solutions. And I think long-term, it'll be good for everyone, including the country. This imbalance that we're experiencing will never be peaceful. This imbalance that we're magnifying even through some policies, it's going to really get us into more trouble as a country.
Can I go back and ask you why did you decide to sell some of your properties? And when did you do that?
Well, because I'm attempting to evolve into a new industry. And I was recently blessed by attending a program, Capital Impact, where they actually focus on new entrepreneurs or landlords, and they teach you how to become a developer. So that same experience I had as a 19-year-old, where I was rejected by the local nonprofit on the northwest side of Detroit, Now I'm being engaged to learn to be a developer. So I'm attempting to scale up.
Interesting. So do you think that you can maintain not only the personal aspects that you have with your current tenants, can you maintain that level of personability and humanity, I guess, responsible development? Is that possible when we talk about a city like Detroit, where so much of our focus on development has to do with the lack of personal interaction and potentially consideration for those who already live in the city?
I do. I think, to be honest with you, Laura, I believe we're born this way. I believe part of the reason God has entrusted me with the ability to be creative and find opportunity and be blessed with opportunity is because your heart is your heart. And I don't numb up my heart. And so those of us who find success will always be preoccupied with trying to be more creative, to strengthen others. Our activism, it lives in us. I mean, to be honest, I sometimes wish my brain were either left or right, either an entrepreneur or an activist. But I think we're actually made the way that we are that way. So I think even no matter what levels of success I may find, I will always be intrigued by creative solutions in housing in particular, and then financial literacy, it's in particular for my community, so that we can do something with the entrenched poverty. I think that the poverty part is definitely something I was made to engage, to disturb. And I think that's why I've been entrusted with a vision.
Entrepreneurial activist Andre Watson, creating a new sector for us. Andre Watson is a landlord who owns property in Detroit. Andre, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Laura, for having me.